¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hello, this is Tiara.
Hello, this is Allie.
Welcome back to another episode of The Goddess Vibration. I'm so glad you guys are here. We're going to take a deep dive into an area that I think afflicts a lot of people. Actually, I would probably argue that it afflicts most people. I just think that a lot of people don't quite realize that. And I'm talking about delusion and also going to be talking about false hope because in my experience, they seem to go hand in hand. And for myself, I didn't realize for a really long time that I struggled with false hope syndrome. And it's such a weird thing because it also can tie you into patterns of self-sabotage. So I do see this among other people, and I think that it's something that deserves a little bit of conversation because knowing that this is something that you're struggling with or that you're carrying can really go a long way when it comes to reevaluating your thoughts and your behaviors and some of the things that you think that might not necessarily be rooted in reality. And at the end of the day, I think, especially in the West and especially in the United States, that our whole society in some degree suffers from delusion. Like, even when we're given things that are contrary to the delusion, like, we still proceed with it. And it's such a weird, unusual pattern and dynamic. And, you know, I haven't quite fully grasped why this happens or why we do this. I just think that it's something that requires great awareness, especially self-awareness. And to escape it, at least for me, it was something that required not only self-reflection, but I also had to have people point it out to me. Because when you're trapped in delusion, like, you don't know that it's delusion. And it can become a very toxic and destructive aspect. And so I really want us to kind of tackle this a little bit, because at least then, if some of you guys are going through a journey of self-discovery, or you're working through your shadows, or you're trying to do some deeper healing work, I'm hoping this will kind of give a little perspective when it comes to beliefs that you might be carrying that aren't rooted in reality.
It's interesting that you have to say that you needed people to point it out for you. And I'm not actually disagreeing with that, because I am actually the one who has been able to kind of be a second set of eyes for Tiara, because I've had many people in my life who were my second eyes and kind of were my mirrors and triggered the shit out of me over multiple times in my lifetime. And going back to our last episode when we were kind of talking about like finding the beauty in triggers, because a lot of people see it as a very like negative thing, and society has shifted. And I have said it once, I'm gonna say it again. We have shifted to this very sensitive, afraid to speak up, walking on eggshells kind of culture, where like our free speech is slowly dwindling. It is being taken away. And I mean, the writing's on the wall with what's going on in the United States with this TikTok ban going on. It's like, you know, there's a lot of power. I'm not saying social media is not toxic. There's a lot of toxicity on social media, but there's also a lot of power. And a lot of people have used the TikTok platform to spread awareness and, you know, not afraid to speak up. Because honestly, you guys, this is like what we need as a society. We need more people speaking up. We need more people bringing in that awareness. We need more people to speak their voice. Now, we can do that without being so triggering. I mean, like, obviously everyone has their own response. So, you know, you can't please everyone. Like, I get that. We're not going to please everyone. Not everyone's going to agree with us. Not everyone's going to like what we have to say. And that's okay. But we need to spread this awareness. We need to have these open and honest conversations, because without them, we're just going to kind of stay in this continued state of delusion and false hope and not shift and continue to have all this anxiety and continue to have all the stress and basically continue to be unhappy.
Agreed. And one of the things I dealt with for a really long time and still do to some degree is this false hope notion, or depending on, you know, where you go to look up this information, some places call it false hope syndrome. And basically, it's this thing that we often do when we repeatedly believe in unrealistic expectations, but we cling to them because they give us a sense of control and optimism. And I'm convinced this is some type of trauma response, because, you know, part of me wonders if we get into these type of cycles because we came up in an environment where we weren't given much hope, or maybe our hopes were dashed or they were squashed, or maybe you came up in an environment where your dreams weren't supported. And so I think after a while, your mind is kind of, as a coping mechanism, develops these unrealistic expectations, but then you place them upon yourself, and you place those expectations upon yourself repeatedly over and over again, and you end up failing each and every time. So I know for me, I've had multiple business endeavors and multiple business dreams and goals. And we've talked about this before in other episodes about how they've never really got off the ground. You know, I struggled with imposter energy, imposter syndrome. That was part of the reason why. But I often had like these expectations of myself that were completely insane, right? So like, especially when it came to social media, sometimes if I had an account and I was trying to promote, I would say to myself, you know, I'm looking to get this many followers in this amount of time. Like, that's my goal. And it might be something crazy. Like, oh, I'm hoping to get 1,000 followers in a month. If I don't get 1,000 followers in a month, you know what? This isn't worth my time. This is a failure and I'm going to end everything. Like, that was the kind of stuff that I would do to myself. And I would do it over and over and over again with like different aspects and different elements. So, you know, if I didn't have so many clients within a specific period of time, then it wasn't worth my time and energy. And that was a waste. And why am I doing this? And this is silly and stupid. And what was I thinking? And to me, all of that was completely reasonable. Like, it made total sense. Like, yeah, I need to have some type of goals, right? Like, everyone has goals. Like, why would I not have goals for this aspiration? I need a barometer of success in some way. Like, why would I not have that? And so what I didn't realize was that what I was expecting of myself and the expectations were completely unrealistic. And I realize this now, that I didn't really look to see what was realistic, like when it came to growing social media followership and when it came to starting a new business and when it came to finding clients. I didn't really think about what was realistic. I just had in my mind, this is my goal, this is my barometer. If this isn't reached, then I know that I'm wasting my time. And it was interesting because I would justify it like that. And sometimes I would justify it as well, if I didn't reach this, it means this because this isn't aligned with me and it's not for me and I shouldn't be doing this. I would use that one too. And so when you believe that, like, you kind of start to lose lose that sense of achievements. Like, you don't feel like you can achieve and attain the way you want to and the way you hope to. And you kind of start to become disillusioned. But it's something that I did to myself, which is what makes it so insidious. And so I really hope that some of you guys who are caught in similar cycles can take a step back and look to see, hey, is it because of the unrealistic expectations that I'm placing upon myself? Is it because of the astronomical goals that I'm placing upon myself? Is that why I'm struggling? Am I not looking at this through a clear, objective lens? Because that might just ultimately be what it is. You might need more time. You might need more support. You might need more help. So again, that's just one example of how this false hope has affected me. It has affected me in different aspects of my life, but I do know that it particularly affected me when it came to some of my business dreams and aspirations.
There's also one more example I kind of want to throw out there that I know Tiara, and I really wish Tiara would have not given up on this one. Tiara has always had like this really, like, she's always been drawn to Japan. And I know one of the things that she, when we actually first met, one of the things that she really wanted to do was to go live in Japan. And one of the best ways to do that, and it's not easy, but one of the best ways to do that is like to enter a teaching program, and then like Japan will pay for your flight, and like, you know, you get a very good salary, and like they'll like either give you an allowance or they'll pay for your living, and you get like all these other health benefits and stuff like that. And this was 15 years ago. I don't know. It's probably changed since then, but something that I know, like, this is a very well-known program. I had even heard of it myself. It's called the JET program. Yeah. And Tiara was just like, you know what? I applied. And when I got denied, I just said, well, screw this, and walked away. And I never applied again. And that kind of broke my heart, because like, even to this day, Tiara still hasn't been to Japan, but yet here she is still saying like, I got to figure out how to get to Japan. And I'm just like, well, if you hadn't given up on the JET program so easily, you might have already been there and lived there and had that experience.
That's true. I completely forgot about the whole JET thing. Yeah, I applied for the JET program. Oh, yeah, you're right. It was about 15 years ago. And at that time, I was working at a bank, and I was like, you know, I want to get out of here and I want to experience something different. And you know, I had a boyfriend who had introduced me to a little bit of Japanese culture, and he had trained one of the Japanese martial art forms, and he was big into anime, and I had gotten into a lot of that. And I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind for my first international experience doing something like this, because they pay you and they support you and they give you a place to live and you get to have this amazing exchange experience. And with that program, the whole point is to introduce their very homogenous society to other cultures. And, you know, I see the benefit on paper. So I did apply to that, and it was a very competitive program, like exceptionally competitive. Like, it wasn't unusual for people to have to apply 2, 3, 4, or 5 times before they even got to the interview stage. And so it's so funny, because I knew that, but when I got the initial rejection, I took it as an indication of my worthiness and worth. And so I was like, okay, well, like, clearly this isn't for me. What was I thinking by thinking I could do something like this? And then I walked away from it. But the desire and like to want to go over there and experience that rich culture, because I've always thought Japan had a very beautiful, rich culture. The desire has never gone away, honestly. So here I am 15 years later trying to see if it's something that's even still doable. But yeah, I completely forgot about that.
I think a lot of people experience the same thing that you do. It's like with the immediate rejection, or, you know, if something doesn't pan out, or when we set expectations for things and it doesn't go as planned, people take it really, really hard.
And they
they do. And it, like, I don't know if it's programming. I don't know if it's like part of the DNA, but like people are just like, well, it didn't work out. Okay, it's not meant for me. Like, it's like the more we get rejected, the more we lose the sense of self. We lose a sense of hope. And it's just kind of like, well, why bother? Like, it's never worked for me in the past. So it's like, why even continue to try? And people get lost in that.
They do. And then you see things like letting go of dreams, you know, and aspirations. Ones that are like of your heart, right? And again, they don't go anywhere. It's just we kind of tell ourselves that we're not worthy or deserving of it.
Right. And unfortunately, like I see that this is affecting so many people right now. And also something that I've seen, I've been kind of active on Reddit the past, I don't know, day. It hasn't been very long. But I've noticed that like a lot of people are just like, why do I always find myself comparing myself to other people? Like, why do I feel like in some ways like I'm being left behind? Why am I feeling like I can't find my place in this world because it's like I just can't get my shit together? And I think these are very interesting questions. And I'm just like, you know, I've been reflecting on some of this where I'm just like, well, is it because of programming? Is it because of ego? Is it because of fear of rejection? Is it because of expectations? I personally think it's a combination of them all.
I do too. And, you know, I think when it comes to people who feel like they don't have anything to look forward to, I think that, I mean, obviously, there's a lot going on in our society right now. Society is struggling. We're, depending on who you talk to, we're seeing a societal decline. And when that happens, you start questioning your aspirations and if they're worth pursuing any longer. And I get that. And that's very difficult to look at. It's difficult to look at a society that you think is crumbling or that feels like it's crumbling in some ways and see a future within it in any kind of way. So, yeah, that sentiment is rife, and I do see it a lot on Reddit too, but I think it's important that we not let what's happening externally affect us internally. And that is so, so hard to do. I know it's so, so, so hard, but what should you be focusing on? Should you be focusing on what's going on externally? Or should you be focusing on, hey, how can I get to a place of balance and contentment so that what's happening externally doesn't affect me so much internally? So I think that we need to kind of change the discourse a little bit and stop basing our decisions and how we're feeling and our lives and our expectations on what we see happening externally. Because I can tell you that it's a much more peaceful existence when you can step back from all of that and go inward and find your peace there, if that makes sense.
It makes sense, and I think that's fantastic advice. But I want to go back to like this whole delusion and false hope aspect of really how we apply it to everything in life. Like we apply it to setting goals and having expectations. We apply it to going after something that we want, or like, I feel like it's actually being applied to everything. But the problem is that when it doesn't work out, or it doesn't work out the way that we had hoped, it's kind of like, what do we do after? After it doesn't work out, it's like, what do we do in that moment? And I feel like a lot of people just kind of give up and give in, and they're just kind of like, well, I tried it, it didn't work out. Well, they walk away and they'll never revisit it. They'll never, you know, try again. And I, for the life of me, I'm just like, just because it didn't work out the first time doesn't mean that you have to give up on it. And I don't understand why more people don't understand that, or maybe you do understand that, but why so many people just walk away?
Well, I mean, again, you have to understand, or at least get to a place where you feel like you're worth it at all, right? So I think, in my opinion, one of the reasons why people do often give up on their dreams and aspirations is because within them someplace, they don't feel like they deserve it anyway. So when they try and they see that it fails or it doesn't work out, that's validation for the negative belief they were already carrying. And so it ends up being a very negative cycle, unfortunately. And, you know, for me, I've carried a lot of delusion around control and perfectionism. And I know that this is common because I see Reddit threads about this all the time, about how we try to wield control over every aspect of our life and plan every single detail. I mean, like, everything in your life must be meticulously jotted down and every factor controlled, and you need a plan A, but you also need a plan B and a C and a D in case plan A doesn't work out. And I exist like that, and, you know, did that for a very, very long time, because that control gave me a sense of, like, ease, and it gave me a sense of comfort. Like, being able to at least believe this false belief that I could control every aspect of my life. And you have to be careful with that, because, first of all, that's a lie. You can't control every aspect of your life. And it's certainly a delusion. And it's not real. You might think it's real, and you might think that you do have control in the ways that you think you do, but you do not. And there is absolutely no feasible way that you can control every single outcome and every possible scenario, and think that you can plan for every possible scenario. And trying to do that, like, I'm telling you guys, is so incredibly exhausting. Like, it is such a major energetic drain that it's not just that, but it also feeds anxiety. Because for me, like, I was never really fully certain that I had factored in every single potential scenario and outcome. And that gave me anxiety. And it's, like, so unnecessary, and it's so self-destructive, and it's crazy that our mind can do that to us. And it took a lot of energy for me to even get to a place where I recognized that I was doing that, you know, and Allie was a big component of that, because I didn't realize the extent of it, and I didn't realize how much comfort that gave me, even if it was a delusion. So that's the thing about delusions, is they kind of give you, like, this sense of power and optimism, but that doesn't last. And all you're really doing is setting yourself up to be anxious and nervous and on edge and restless, because your body knows that it's not possible, and that it's not a realistic way to live, if that makes sense. And all the emotion tied to that just kind of sits there, making you more anxious. And again, it just feeds another destructive cycle.
It absolutely does do all of that. The thing about control is that a lot of people actually not only try to control everything within themselves, and they can try to control their environment, but I have seen it go as far as trying to control other people.
Oh, yeah.
It's like people just have it, and I get that. Like, people form control issues because fear of the unknown. They're just like, okay, so if I can come up with every permutation, if I can come up with every strategy, if I have, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G there, then I'm good. It's like, yeah. You don't have to it's not, you know, it's like, it gives you a sense of comfort. Like you said, it's just like, oh, okay. So I have like 7 scenarios played out. And as long as it goes in one of these scenarios, I'm good. Like exactly. And it's just, it's that sense of comfort. And I'm just like, life really doesn't work that way. Because what happens if an 8th scenario comes at you that you are not prepared for?
Right. You're screwed. But we don't think about that. We don't think about the 8th scenario. It's just like your mind, and it's just, it's such an energetic waste.
But it your is. Mind, it's a huge energetic waste.
Oh my gosh. But your mind thinks about as many scenarios as it can. And that you were even able to do that, I know for me, gave me a sense of accomplishment. I was like, all right, I got everything squared away. Like, I've got every potential scenario mapped out. Like, I'm good. But it's so crazy because it never got rid of the anxiety. Like, the anxiety was still always there.
So I actually had a lot of control issues. I mean, for me, it was obviously based on trauma. And I know that a lot of my control issues were based solely on trauma and a lot of the things that I had experienced and gone through. And it wasn't really until like my last relationship that, you know, he was really able to showcase the amount of anxiety that I actually was carrying and the amount of control that I truly had. And it wasn't, and I wasn't so much about like controlling him. It was more like I just needed to control myself and I needed to like protect myself because like my circumstances when I was younger, I did not feel safe. I did not feel protected. And that's really when the control started to form because it's like if you don't feel safe in your environment, if you don't feel safe in your everyday life, that's when you build this sense of, this is when your ego takes over and you're just like, okay, so the only way that I know how to survive this is control as much as I am able to, meaning controlling my emotions, controlling my environment, controlling how I act, controlling, you know, playing out scenarios. Okay, like if this happens at school tomorrow, then what are you going to do? What's your escape plan? If this, you know, if this happens in everyday life, it's like, what am I going to do? What's my escape plan to make yourself feel comfortable? But Tiara is right. We do carry a ton of anxiety that comes with that because it's like, I always knew it didn't matter how many, you know, permutations and scenarios I had played out in my mind, a part of me always knew, and I'm pretty sure this is where the anxiety comes from, is, well, what if I miss something? Then what?
Exactly.
And that is really unsettling. So, like, there was this game that my ex-boyfriend and I used to play where it's like, he was just like, okay, so tell me something that you actually think that you're in control of. And then I'm going to explain to you how you have absolutely no control over that. Now, it was a game that I really did not enjoy at first, but then I actually ended up loving it because it gave me the perspective that I really needed to realize that control is, it's just an illusion. Just like fear is just an illusion. And it was really through this little game that we used to play where I was just like, oh, okay. And I realized that like my anxiety started to go down. I also realized that like I started to see more clearly. My anxiety started to go down. And I was able to release and surrender that sense of control because I finally was able to like reprogram and like tell my own system, my neuron system, that like, you know what, you actually don't have control because control is just an illusion and anything can happen, and the best way to live life is to surrender that control and learn how to go with the flow and learn how to accept and deal with scenarios as they come up, because all this time and energy that you are spending like worrying about certain things happening, may never freaking happen. And like being able to release that and being able to just find inner peace, best thing that has ever happened to me.
I'm sorry, can you tell me more about this game? Like, is it a board game or it's just like a thing that you and him did?
It was just a thing him and I did.
Oh, okay. I was just like, wait, which game is this? Is this, can I find this at Toys R Us or wherever you go, Amazon?
No, it's actually, it was just something that I think it's actually something that him and his dad used to do, I think.
Oh, and that's interesting.
Yeah, it was something that he and I used to do, and it was honestly the best thing ever for me.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And Allie's absolutely right that it's when you can surrender, it lifts a weight off of you. Now, I haven't fully gotten there, and I still have fears I'm working through, but I hope I can get there someday. And, you know, we were talking about control, but another one that has affected me quite heavily is perfectionism, which is also a delusion because there's no such thing as perfect. But I realized that as a kid, that the notion of perfection was something that was reinforced in me time and time again. And it was when I was in middle school. I was at a private middle school, and I was on a basketball team. So, I mean, it was just like we were 6th, 7th, 8th grade. So our team was actually really, really good. Now, I was a very tall, lanky kid, and I didn't really care for sports, but I always got the, oh my gosh, you're so tall, you should play basketball or volleyball. For whatever reason, it always ended up being basketball most of the time when people said this to me. So I was like, all right, whatever, let me just try this crap. So I tried it and I hated it, right? I hated it, but it gave me something to do. I was already really shy and awkward, so it was a good way for me to try to overcome some of that. I made friends. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll stick to this. But we were actually a phenomenal team. Like, we were one of the best teams out of 2 or 3 teams in the entire region. Like, we were spectacularly good. And it is because we had a coach who expected perfection from us. And he would even say to us, we don't quit training. You don't quit doing lines and running and exercising until we reach perfection. Because that's all I expect from you is to be perfect. And I was like, oh shit, there must be something to this. So I didn't realize how much I internalized that. But yeah, I remember that we would play these games sometimes where the team was better. Like, it happens because, again, we're not perfect. But there were teams out there that were better than us. And there were teams that had, like, girls that were 6 feet. And I think the tallest person on our team was, like, 5'11", 5'10", 5'11". We had one girl who was, like, she was tall, but she was also really big. And so, like, you know, she could muscle around some of these bigger girls. But I remember playing teams in middle school where the girls were over 6 feet. And I was like, oh, we're fucked. Like, there's no way. And the same teams would kick our ass. There were 2 teams and they would always kick our ass. And he would get so angry. Our coach would get angry. He would get disappointed in us. And I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, we're not good enough. Like, we're so good, but we're not good enough. And I internalized a lot of that. And that's why I ended up carrying some of these perfectionist traits. And I expected perfection from myself in just about every aspect of life. Professionally, I didn't really have hobbies. But if I did have any, I would expect perfection in that. And it was just this kind of thing where it was like, I'm never good enough. I need to keep finding ways to be better. To get better, I need to read more books. I need to get more coaching. I need to get more training. I need to figure out how to get to full-blown perfectionism. And it was always like this unattainable thing that I should continue to strive for and do that like regardless of whatever it takes. Which, of course, ended up being very destructive, and it created a lot of delusions around myself and made it even harder for me to see my flaws. Because now you have to pierce through that delusion of perfectionism. So I was just reflecting on that and like how that experience from middle school played such a pivotal role in my thinking around perfectionism.
Sports can do that too.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that it could to that extent, honestly. But I could definitely see that doing something like that to many other people, especially if you had a coach that was like that and like pushed you to the limit. Like, I mean, our coach pushed us to the limit and we were fantastic because of it. So in my mind, I was like, well, this pays off, right? Like, we're being pushed to the point of vomiting, but it's working. And we're like one of the best teams in the region. Like, you can't argue that, right? And I didn't argue that. And we didn't argue that. We were like, yeah, thank you, coach. Please drive us further so that we can be more perfect.
Yeah, sports is definitely, you know, sports is like, there's a lot of benefits, but there's definitely some cons, especially like when you get up into those higher levels or like when you're trying to be a championship team. And like, you know, it's very grueling, actually. And, you know, I was a gymnast when I was a kid, and I'm just telling you, like, gym, you are actually scored on how perfect you can be. And I would say that for me, like, a lot of my perfectionism, it probably did come from sports. I haven't reflected so much on that, but I could definitely see that as a possibility. But I know for me, like, a lot of my perfectionism came from the fact that I wrapped my self-worth in perfectionism. Like, for me, it was like, well, if I thrive to be the best at something, or if I, you know, if I can dominate in something, then, you know, like, for me, it was like, you're going to be respected. And I think that was my trauma around perfection, was the fact that, like, I didn't feel safe when I was younger and I didn't really feel respected as, like, a respected person. So I was just like, well, if I work really hard and if I become great at something, or if I become number one at something, then I tied a lot of my self-worth into, you know, the affirmations and the praise and being respected and finally being noticed.
Yeah. And, you know, I did a lot of that too. And I think it came from similar things. Like, I think it came from wanting to be more respected because, you know, again, I was a very awkward, lanky kid in middle school and I was bullied. I wasn't respected, but I wanted that respect. And I think that that's another reason why I internalized so heavily, was because, like, hey, if I can get really good at this or anything, will I get that respect that I'm so wanting and craving that I haven't received elsewhere? And yeah, perfectionism was also, for me, same thing. It was a really big, important part of my worth. And I tied my worth into that delusion of perfection. And I think that that's actually quite common. I think that, you know, especially the high achievers, like, if you're a high achiever, you're a type A, and you're just a huge go-getter, like, I think a lot of those individuals carry some aspect of perfectionism need, or carry at least at some level that need to be perfect. And I mean, when I say it drove, like, everything, it was like, even with work in the professional setting, like, my work needed to be spotless. Like, I'm double checking everything and I'm running it through, you know, spell check filters, or I'm, you know, giving it multiple glances before it gets submitted, before it gets sent. And if there's one criticism, then that means that it's an indication of my low worth. Like, it was such a very unhealthy thing to carry. And anything that challenges it will send you spiraling. And, you know, for me, I mentally spiraled often, and I ruminated a lot. And so if anything would trigger anything that challenged my worth, that's what would happen to me. And so, again, it just ended up being another very insidious cycle.
Oh, and it absolutely is. And, you know, that's another thing that I have worked very hard on reprogramming. And, you know, I would say that I have just been very fortunate with the people who I've met who have really contributed a lot to my journey and my healing process. You know, oftentimes, like, Tiara and I will state that, you know, the healing journey, it is unique to everyone. And, like, no two scenarios are going to be exactly the same, because we are unique individuals. We're complex individuals who have our own processes and our own perceptions and our own way of dealing with things. But there are commonalities among us. Like, even though Tiara and I have both been bullied, you know, we internalize those differently and it shows differently. Just as an example to show or to state or showcase the fact that even though, like, we were both bullied, it's like it even though there's similarities among us, we still put our own perceptions and our own processes to kind of what happened in our childhood. And that goes for everyone. And I think what a lot of people don't understand is that, like, even though there are commonalities, every person's journey is going to be unique to them, regardless of the commonalities. But what's great is that if you're open and willing, like, you will meet people along this journey who are those mirrors, who will trigger you, who are actually there to, like, help assist you in your journey. And it takes a lot of mental fortitude to be able to recognize that, like, despite, you know, someone putting up that mirror and making you look at yourself, not always pleasant or fun, but it's like, once you can get past that initial, like, annoyance, frustration, that initial, like, why are you here? Go away. You develop, like, this certain appreciation for those people who come into your life and are able to be that mirror and really kind of show you in a new light. Because without that, I'm telling you, I would probably still be very behind in my healing journey. Because if no one's there to help you or assist you, it's just like, you're just kind of like, unless you are able to navigate your own system, navigate your own mind, navigate your own behaviors without outside help, people are going to kind of be like Tiara and just kind of stay in the state of delusion and false hope and this bliss of, oh yeah, like, everything's fine. Like, I got this. Because that's what your ego is telling you. Your ego is telling you, you got this. Like, you're right. They're wrong. And it's a very dangerous thing.
It is. And, you know, I haven't had the same, unfortunately, I haven't had people call me out in the way that I think I should have been, not even just in my adulthood, but also, like, through adolescence. I didn't really get that same exposure. And I think that we all need that to some degree. You know, the only reason why I'm anywhere where I am now is because of Allie, and thanks to her support and the support of the gods and the archangels is the only reason why I am where I am right now. But, you know, if you don't have that, I know a lot of people do not have that. If you don't have that, then it's going to require, like, some type of desire to want to improve. And I would say that if you're working with, like, a therapist or a counselor, and they're a good therapist or counselor, that that's a good avenue to at least explore some of these things. Now, that's not to say that the counselor might even know that or pick up on that. And I know a lot of people can't afford that. But there are other things that you can do. Like, there are books. I read a lot of books when I was getting started on my journey. And I was just starting to get to the ones that were talking about changing, like, the brain, like neuroplasticity, and being able to change your thinking patterns and your behaviors. And those are so, so, so valuable. Like, the books that talk about retraining the brain or retraining the mind are very powerful and very helpful. So if you're feeling like you're curious about whether you might be stuck in some type of false hope syndrome or delusion or patterns, look at some of these books that can help you to not only just see the pattern, but change the thinking, change the behavior, retrain the brain, and, you know, create more healthy connections, because that will at least point you in a direction.
I haven't read as many self-help books, so I really can't speak on this. But I definitely know a lot of people who read them and swear by them. I definitely think that there's like good advice. I mean, obviously, there has to be good advice in them or people wouldn't be praising them the way that they do. But Tiara's right. If you don't have a lot of money, books is a great avenue to start, but it's not going to replace like that physical connection, the person that, you know, like a person that can really like talk you through it or walk you through it or vent or whatever. So it is really important that like everyone should have someone, just someone that they can like talk to or bounce ideas off of or just say like, I actually had a friend say to me the other day, like, hey, can I get your opinion on this? And like, I would really appreciate it if you would be honest with me. And so I gave them my honest opinion and they were just like, you know what? Like, thank you. You know, like we all fall off on the healing journey sometimes, and sometimes we just need a new perspective, or sometimes we just need someone to highlight something maybe that we have missed. And, you know, they were very appreciative of that. So it's like, don't be afraid to ask. I know some people might be scared of the answer, and I know that's probably why some people don't ask. It's because, you know, they don't want to hear the answer, or they want to run, or like, a laundry list of reasons on why people are just too afraid to ask. But, you know, if you feel comfortable enough and if you're with the right person, like, don't be afraid to ask.
Agreed. And if for whatever reason you can't do that, or if for whatever reason you don't have connections that you can rely upon for something like that, there are online communities that are very supportive. There's a ton of online communities on Facebook that are geared towards some of this stuff. I've seen a couple on Reddit, but we also have a spiritual community that is meant to be just that. Like, it's meant to be a soul tribe. It's meant to help support you along your journey and provide you with tips, tools, and resources that can be helpful. It's called the Higher Vibe Tribe. You can access it on our website. So, you know, if you don't know anyone in the physical, there are still resources and ways where you can reach out to someone, get some support, and, you know, ask for that feedback, ask for some guidance, ask for some tools or resources to help you see some of the things that you might not be seeing within yourself.
Yes, Tiara, thank you so much for plugging the community. I was actually going to get there. But I mean, this is actually why we have decided to do the community, because like we recognize that there is a need for it. It's just obviously spreading the word and, you know, help have people find us, because with marketing and algorithms and our little niche market that we have, I mean, it's just difficult. It's an uphill battle, especially because, you know, the Matrix really doesn't like spirituality for obvious reasons. But yeah, I mean, you'll get access to like Tiara and I, and this is why we keep doing this podcast, because it's really an opportunity for you guys to get to know us and what we have to offer.
Yes. And you can get to that through our website at www.goddessvibrationstudio.com, which, by the way, also includes two really cool freebies. There is a crystals guide on there, and it's a very thorough crystals guide too. And it's easy to read, easy to follow. You can use it to activate your crystals, make your crystals work for you in a way that you probably haven't been able to before. And there's also a clairsenses guide on there that is meant to help you identify the clairs you might be carrying and how to know which clairs you might be carrying. And both of those are completely free on our website. Completely free. Gifts to you guys. So please do check those out as well.
And we're also working on third gift. We're working out on the, you know, we're just working out some logistics on our third freebie. But I think this one's really cool, and I think you guys will find it interesting, especially if you're into tarot.
Yes. So our YouTube channel, you should be able to get to it through our websites. We're going to be posting some new content on our YouTube. That's going to be really fun and really helpful too. So please do follow us on YouTube as well. Again, you can get to that through our website.
Oh, speaking of YouTube, there's actually one more thing that I also want to bring up. In our recent episode with EFT tapping with Sarah Illich, she's an EFT practitioner, we actually did a bonus clip with Sarah that is up on our YouTube. It's about a 13-minute mini session. Sessions with Sarah go 90 minutes, but this was just kind of giving people a taste of what EFT tapping is. And what we tapped on was making an empowering choice. So I encourage all of our listeners to visit our YouTube, check out the tapping clip, tap along with us, fill in the blanks, and let us know if you guys feel any sensations or any, like, you know, tightness or tingles or anything going on in the body. Like, sound off below in the comments, because we would love your feedback.
Yeah, I felt some weird sensations in my throat, and it, like, caught me off guard. But it let me know that, hey, maybe there's some more chakra work I need to do there.
Absolutely. So please go check out all of that. Check out our website, check out Patreon, check out our YouTube, because we have fun and exciting stuff all geared to help you guys.
Absolutely.
So thank you, everyone. I hope you guys were able to take something away from this message about, like, perfectionism and control and delusions and false hope, because these are things that we all carry, and it is an uphill battle. But the message is, you guys are not alone. We're here to help. We're here to support you, and we're putting out all this content to support all of you.
That we are.